And so to our album reviews on this Friday evening. First up will be the star that just can't stop delivering albums to her worldwide audience, Taylor Swift's new, and I'm making large air inverted commas as I say new there, album. It's not so much new as a re-recording and taking ownership of her Grammy-winning 2008 album Fearless, now with the tagline Fearless brackets Taylor's version. Second album will be Declan O'Rourke, who returns after 2 years with his Paul Weller produced album called Arrivals, and Rhiannon Giddens and her partner Francesco Turisi's new album is called They're Calling Me Home, recorded in Ireland here during lockdown. John Maher and Andrea Cleary have been listening. Let's have a listen to a piece of music first of all. Taylor Swift's original album was called, as I said, Fearless. This one is called Fearless, Taylor's version. There was a track on the first album called Love Story. There's a track on this album called Love Story as well. Love Story, and that the version that we hear on Fearless brackets Taylor's version, the new-ish album from Taylor Swift. So let's explain why it's new stroke new-ish. Andrea, what is happening with Fearless Taylor's version?
I got a bit nervous there. I thought you were going to give us a quiz as to whether that was the old one or the new one. I knew it was the new one, don't worry. Yeah, so Taylor Swift, as I said, this was originally released in 2008 when Taylor was just 18 years old. This is really the record that broke her. She won her first album of the year, Grammy, with it. And she kind of found herself signing into a record deal which gave away the rights to the masters for her first six albums to Big Machine Records, which is not out of the ordinary, really. But then what ended up happening was that these masters, through a kind of a series of different sales and acquisitions of different between different parties, they ended up in the hands of Scooter Braun, who is a producer that has kind of worked with Kanye West in the past. Taylor Swift has claimed that he has repeatedly bullied her over the years, and she didn't like the idea that he ended up selling the original masters for, I think it was $300 million. So she decides then, actually, I own the songs, and if I re-record them, then I will own those masters. So she's now encouraging people to make sure that you're listening to Taylor's version and not the original.
Yeah, okay. And allegations of bullying, of course, do not constitute bullying at all in any sense. He owns them, illegally he owns them. So that's what he's doing with his owning of the masters.
Yeah.
John, we had 13 tracks on the original album back in 2008. 26?
Yeah.
On this
26,
one?
She has re-recorded every single track that came from those sessions when she was just 18, bear in mind. And six of them are previously unreleased. The others appeared on various deluxe editions of the album. It's worth remembering that the original Fearless was the best-selling album in the US in 2009, the year after it was released, although not the world. Susan Boyle, bizarrely, had that honour. And it's interesting that she has chosen to re-record these six albums, but has started with this one rather than the self-titled debut, which came out when she was 16. And partly because this is a far stronger album than the debut was. It showed that even in her tender years, she was a very good songwriter. And it's interesting listening to these re-recordings now, because it is a reminder that for those people that came to Taylor Swift around the time of the Red album or the 1989 album, long before that, she was releasing some really, really good stuff, and that's apparent here.
Right. Oh, let's have a little listen again to the beginning of the track we heard at the beginning of the item. This is from the new album, Taylor's version, Love Story, Taylor's version. We were both
young.
Okay, I'll just fade that down now. So that's the new version. Now, cast your minds back to 2000 and your ears back to 2008 if you can, and this is what you would have heard. We were both young when I first saw you. All right, so that's the original love story from Taylor Swift's 2008 album Fearless, and before that you heard love story from Fearless, Taylor's version. Is there much of a difference there? I mean, you can recognise the difference certainly when you hear them close together, Andrea.
Yeah, I think throughout the album you could definitely argue that there's not much of a difference, but I think particularly in Love Story, that was a really the Love Story Taylor's version has actually been out. It was released before this album. I didn't get around to it until the album came out. So today I spent ages this morning doing exactly what you did just there, which is just switching between the two the two songs, going back and forth throughout it. And there's this drum fill at the end of the second chorus that I could have sworn wasn't in the original. I went and checked and it is there, but it just sounds so big and bold, and I think the instruments are just a lot warmer, everything's crisper, there's a lot more studio experience and confidence this time around that you didn't have the first time.
Well, there's something there that wasn't there before, because the new version is 3 minutes and 56 seconds long and the old version is 3 minutes and 52 seconds long, although that might just be...
And I don't know what it is. I tried to find it.
Yeah, well, it could be the silence at the end of the track as much as anything else, you know, you wouldn't know what exactly that is made up of. What's going on here, John? Is it simply, she's known for when she's annoyed about something that she makes sure that she makes her point. Is she simply making a point here?
Oh, I think so, absolutely. This is the ultimate revenge. I mean, her fans, and they are rabid fans, are discussing online about how best to delete the old versions of Fearless and presumably the other five albums once she gets around to them. I mean, the re-recordings are what might be best termed faithful. I mean, she in no attempt, she doesn't attempt to change lyrics around or to look back at some of the kind of embarrassing couplets and think, okay, I'm 31, 32 now. I'm gonna rethink those. In fairness to her, she doesn't do that. This is a snapshot of a young woman in her 30s looking back to the period when she was 18 and delivering those songs.
Yeah, and I suppose, and you know, there are songs like 15. When you hear an 18-year-old singing about falling in love at 15, it's one thing. But when you hear a 31-year-old singing about falling in love at 15 with exactly the same lyrics, it becomes something else. Does it merit it? Does it earn its keep? Or is she just making a few bob here, Andrea?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think no matter what way you look at it, it's such an interesting thing to have happened. And I think I remember around the time of Reputation, like I've had a love-hate relationship with Taylor Swift for as long as I can remember. But I remember I really fell out with her around the time of Reputation because I just thought that she was picking battles that weren't worth fighting. I'm with her on this. I really do think that she's right to not change any of the lyrics. She's right to not really change anything, because to do so would be to encourage that sort of side by side comparison, or there will be people who would inevitably like the originals. I'm with her here. I think it sounds better.
Stars then from you, Andrea.
It's a 4 from me. Really enjoyed it.
All right, you really enjoyed it. And there is, I think, one or two material from the period that wasn't on the album at the time but is now on this album, 26 tracks in all. John, does anything earn its place in those extra tracks and stars?
I quite like Mr. Perfectly Fine, which apparently is about Joe Jonas, her then boyfriend. It's not pleasant for him. I have to say, I think it's a very good album, but I would give the album 4 stars, but in terms of the overall enterprise, it's a 3 stars from me, because effectively we're getting the same album again. And I would like to have, you know, Ryan Adams took 1989 and transformed it, so she had the opportunity to completely reinvent her own music and didn't. So for that reason, I'm not quite as enamored as Andrea is.
Right, 4 and 3 respectively then from Fearless Taylor's version. Let's move on to Declan O'Rourke and his new album Arrivals. Paul Weller famously said of Declan O'Rourke's song Galileo that it was a song that he wished he'd written. Relationship with Weller has endured, and now he is the producer of O'Rourke's new album called Arrivals. And here's a track called The Stars Over Kinvara. long before I ran. That's the opening verse there of The Stars Over Kinvara from Declan O'Rourke's new album, Arrivals. John, Declan's last album, Big Exploration of the Irish Famine, Chronicles of the Great Irish Famine, are we in a very different place with this new album?
We are indeed. I really liked what he did the last time, but this is a much more languid, personal, introspective album. I mean, the previous album you mentioned has a very weighty title, and there were weighty subjects in it and handled very well by him. But this is probably more comfortable territory for him. Mm. And it is very personal. I mean, the song we've just heard, he resides now in Kinvara with his wife and three-year-old child. And there's a love of place that's very apparent, not just in that song, but in several of the songs here. And, you know, he seems in a contented state, and we, the listener, I think, benefit from that.
And Andrea, Declan O'Rourke has spoken about seeking out a kind of a strip back, a minimalist type of approach to get to the essence of his music. Is that what you're getting on this record?
I'm not sure if minimalist would be what I'd call it. I mean, I think, you know, his everything is kind of, there's nothing really you can reasonably take issue with on this album. His voice throughout is note perfect. His guitar playing is note perfect. It's all very perfect, a bit by numbers. It's a bit, there's not much by way of dynamics, and the arrangements, I think they're technically and tonally quite pleasant, but it's a little bit predictable and, dare I say, sentimental.
Yeah, well, you suppose you certainly get a sentimental feel. Well, he is talking about his ancestors, so it's understandable that he might be sentimental about that. But let's listen to a section from a track called Andy Sells Coke, which has a kind of, certainly in the title, there's a sense of something slightly grittier. Let's have a listen. Thinks they are friends. That's a track called Andy Sells Coke from Declan O'Rourke's new album, Arrivals. Obviously, it's a very serious song about a very serious subject and a young man that finds himself caught up in drug dealing to feed his own drug habit there, John. But the music is totally at odds with that. It's as Andrea describes it, it's quite a pleasant tone. Does that contrapuntal aspect work for you?
It did actually on that song. You know, there was that strange juxtapositioning of music that seems quite freewheeling. And I think Paul Weller is on guitar for part of that. But I think Declan O'Rourke's strength throughout his career has been an ability to weave stories into songs, into 3-minute, 4-minute songs, whether it's looking into his own heart or, in the case of that, I suppose, getting a flavour of somebody he knows in life or just a fictional incident, a vignette. And I think he picks his lyrics with great care. I've always felt that about him, particularly, I mean, everybody knows Galileo in terms of how he kind of structured that song. And I think that Andy Sells Coke feels like an anomaly on an album that is very personal, and that seems like...
Yeah, well, there are other songs on there as well. Olympian, which deals with the story of a Syrian refugee, Yusra Mardini, and actually being a swimmer in the Olympics and had got out, climbed out of the boat and helped pull the boat to safety when her and the group that were going across the ocean at the time were involved there. There's also a song called Have You Not Heard The War Is Over. What about that aspect of the Galileo thing strikes me, Andrea? You know, Paul Weller saying he wished he'd written that song. Declan wrote kind of on a hiding to nothing. That was such an amazing song. It's always going to be held up against everything else he writes, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, you mentioned Have You Not Heard The War Is Over There? And I think for me, on the more sort of politically slanted moments on the record, I really found myself struggling. I mean, Have You Not Heard The War Is Over? There's lyrics like, Have You Not Heard The War Is Over? They found these new things called peace. And I actually had to go and Google whether or not this was a cover song, because I thought that the last time that you'd be able to get away with a lyric like that was protesting the Vietnam War. It was so maudlin and sentimental that
you weren't enamoured. How does that translate into stars?
I enjoyed Andy Sells Coke. Is probably the song on the album that kind of woke me back up. But it's two from you.
I think you're more enamoured of the album than that, John.
Yeah, I felt very differently about it. I thought the languid, jazzy closer, that thing we share, was really beautiful. It's a solid four from me.
Solid four from you. Very big difference of opinion there then in terms of the Declan O'Rourke album Arrivals. Let's go on to Rhiannon Giddens and Francesco Teresi, an album called They're Calling Me Home. This is the version that we get of Amazing Grace. Just a flavour there of Amazing Grace from Rhiannon Giddens and Francesco Teresi's new album, They're Calling Me Home. John, they had huge success with their previous album, There Is No Other. It was a Grammy Award winner, I think, in fact, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And here they are back together again with some others on board. How representative is that version of Amazing Grace for what they do with well-known songs and new songs on this album?
Well, it's hard to say in some respects because the album is so eclectic. There are so many different styles at play. You know, Rhiannon Giddens would have come to prominence via Carolina Chocolate Drops, and it's very much Appalachian old-time folk music, both of which exist here. But there are Irish elements, the Illan Pipe,
Eimear Mayock, through.
And also Italian ballads, because her partner, Francesco Teresi, who's a very important aspect of this, has had an influence there. I just found this spellbinding from beginning to end. And it's really intriguing in that it was recorded during the first or second lockdown. And it's about lockdown.
Yeah, everything is about home. Let me go to Andrea, because we're tight on time on it. Andrea, how did the album work for you?
Oh, I just thought it was tremendous. I was so moved from it from start to finish. It grabs you by the throat and you can't look away from it. I love what they do with that eclectic mix of different kinds of traditions. It treats lots of different styles of folk traditional music with equal weight regardless of their geography. You have these Italian lullabies standing alongside American bluegrass and traditional Irish, but there's still this real sense of cohesion to it, that there's a story being told from start to finish. It's a spellbinding.
Yeah, I must say, I totally agree with the pair of you on that. And I think it's worth mentioning the presence of Eimear Mayock, flutes and piper on this. And Yuel Timbo is on there as well.
His guitar work on this is outstanding.
Stunning material right across it. I really want to revisit this. I hope we'll get a chance to do it at some stage later on. But stars from you, first of all, on this one, Andrea?
4.5.
And what are you saying, John?
I think it's a glorious album. 5 stars all the way.
5 stars all the way from John. Full accord on their Calling Me Home from Rhiannon Giddens and Francesco Teresi, from both Andrea and Cleary and John Maher there. And before that, they were speaking about Declan O'Rourke's Arrivals and Taylor Swift's Fearless, Taylor's version of that album.